The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Okay, so we're chapter 11. And this is going to be the final class on Koheles. Shlach lachmecha al pnei hamayim. Cast your bread upon the waters. Ki berav hayamim timsa'eno. Because in many days you will find it. Strange, what's he saying? Now, in general, the whole nature of his approach at this point has become somewhat of advice. You know, before it was kind of like the earlier part of the book was somewhat bemoaning life and its futilities. And then he slowly moved towards advice for life, how to make life a meaningful one. So it, you know, goes into that category, this whole part of it here. So what is lechem? What is bread? And what is mayim? And what does the waters represent? So numerous commentaries see the notion of bread as money, which is anyways what it's called in lingo these days. It's dough or bread. Hey man, got any bread, man? Shlach lachmacha, throw your bread, meaning your money, upon the waters. Okay? And here, Rashi sees the whole notion as referring to tzedakah, charity. Even if the person you're going to give charity to is analogous to water, meaning that this person really will see no end to their tzedakah. They will, you will always have to help them. Because they're like waters that have no end to them, so to speak. No bottom to their water, really. Something like that. You should still cast your bread upon the waters. Why? Because in many days you will find it. Meaning, referring to in the world to come, your tzedakah is actually, your charity is actually an investment. And it's not like you're throwing it away, you know, but actually you're investing your money in the way that you get the best returns, which is the returns will hit you in many days from now, which is referring to the world to come. It can also be referring to this world, because you don't know what your chesed, what your kindness is really doing. What is it really doing? For instance, Rashi brings down an example of this, which is Yitro, who became later on the father-in-law of Moses. The story as it goes is that Moses was found by Yitro's daughters. They thought he was an Egyptian. And yet Yitro did tremendous chesed and invited him in and gave him food. He didn't know who he was. And so he invited a complete stranger into his home. And in the end, it turns out to be the king of Israel. Turns out to be his own son-in-law in the future. And it turns out that this man himself brings Yitro into the life of eternity because Yitro converted. So you just never know what little acts of kindness might in fact return upon you. So that's one way of understanding this, that it's referring to tzedakah, it's referring to charity, and then in the future you will find it. It's not money thrown away, chas v'shalom. Another way of understanding lachmacha, one of the commentaries explains, is Torah. Okay? Because Torah is also analogous to bread. It's your real inner nourishment. So it was the Talumos Chachma, which is a commentary. He explains, throw your Torah to the water. And he sees the water as a symbol of a generation, but a generation that really doesn't have too much substance to it. All right? And he explains that if you throw your Torah to the water, you will find it in many days. This meaning that even if you feel that the Torah that you're teaching is as if throwing it to the water, right? You will find it in many days. In other words, if you feel that the people aren't really listening or they're not ready to hear it, don't worry because something definitely got in. It's definitely having an impact. And only in years from now, perhaps, we'll actually see that it really made its mark. So that's another way of seeing it. However, I think in a kind of general way, there's a certain general mood to this verse, which I get anyways, which is a kind of happy-go-lucky, easy-go-lucky kind of attitude, which is going to be somewhat of what he's going to talk about. Which is, if you want to live in this world and make the best out of it, then you have to have a little bit more of that cast your bread to the waters. And in the future you'll find it. But if you become too serious, too contriving, too planning, not that, you know, God forbid planning isn't important. Of course planning is important. But there's a point where a person reaches where they kind of plan their life out, so much so that they strangle the life out of life. All right? And so I think there's a kind of happy-go-lucky attitude in vis-a-vis whether it's teaching Torah or vis-a-vis whether it's giving tzedakah or doing good deeds. You know, you don't know what it will bring. You don't know what it will ultimately mean. But that's the way you have to live your life. You know, a little bit more of a happy-go-lucky attitude. Tein chelik lishiva, give a portion to seven, even to eight. Ki lo teida ma ye ra ala aretz, because you don't know what will be or when will be the bad in the land. Now, what is he referring to here? Rashi once again sees this as relating to tzedakah, giving us advice. What's the advice? That you should not put all your tzedakah in one place, all your charity in one place. Just like you shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket. All right? And he's giving us some very good investment advice, right? I mean, I learned this when I was in, I took a course in high school in business, because I thought one day I'd become an accountant. Thank God I did not become an accountant. but you know, what could I say? I was Jewish. What? Pardon? That's right. Well, that was it. My parents wanted me to be either a doctor or an accountant or a dentist. I said, well, you know, the truth is I'm doing that in a spiritual way. So, anyways, but this is good advice. You know, in the stock market, you don't put all your money to one stock, but if you distribute your investments in different stocks, then you win. Okay? Because they're down here, they're up here. Okay? But King Solomon is saying this about good deeds also. And King Solomon is saying the same thing about tzedakah, that even when it comes to tzedakah, you have to have an investor's mind. Okay? And that is, you know, the sad thing about it, is people have no understanding of what tzedakah is, of what charity is. See, the truth is there's no such concept of charity in Judaism. There's only tzedakah. And tzedakah has been loosely and unfortunately translated as charity. But the notion of charity is I do something that I don't need to do. Okay? That's what generally people understand charity to be. Charity is this act that I do that I don't really have to do, but I do it. That's not what tzedakah is. Because tzedakah comes from the terminology lahatzdik. And what does lahatzdik mean? It means to justify. Alright? It means to justify. And that's a very strange terminology for tzedakah. Okay? But what am I in fact doing? What justifies my having all this money? That I give it to people who need it. That's the only reason I have it. Okay? I have been commissioned by God, entrusted by God with all this money. You know, if it's, and maybe it's even not all this money, but whatever money I have, to the extent of charity I can give, I should realize that it's that act itself which justifies my having this money in the first place. Because the only reason I have money is to do something with it, productive in terms of helping the world and bringing about a greater consciousness of God, or supporting, you know, or surviving, right, which is all part of our service and living in this world. And so people have this strange idea that tzedakah, charity, is a nice thing I do, and I'm a nice guy because I do it, rather than understanding that, number one, it is the only way I can truly justify the wealth I have, and number two, it's the true investment I can make with my money. Okay? To invest in people. To invest in God's world. To invest in helping people. And so, he's giving us, in a funny way, advice regarding good deeds and charity. And he's telling us that, you know, break it up into seven, even eight. You know? Don't invest your chesed, your kindness. Don't invest your tzedakah, your charity, in one place, but distribute it. Why? Because you don't know when the bad times will come. And that's very interesting. You don't know when the bad times will come. Because what he's telling you to do is to not only give money in a kind of happy-go-lucky way, you know, not be so sticky with giving your charity, but he's telling you to do it profusely. Okay? To do it profusely. Why? Because you don't know when the bad times are going to hit. So you see the opposite kind of psychology? See, most people would say, gee, I can't give money. Why? Because I don't know when the bad times are going to hit. You remember the story I told you when I was in, doesn't matter where, I was in a certain city, and I went raising money from this fellow who was a very, very wealthy man, extremely wealthy man. And I walked into his office, and psh, what an office, and the furniture and everything. And I give him a whole song and dance about Israelite and Jewish education and assimilation. I give him the whole thing. And he turns to me and he says, listen, Rabbi, don't let all this fool you. I said, what do you mean? He says, don't let this all fool you. I worry every day that I might lose this. So I can't give you a lot. Do you see that attitude? Is I might lose this, so I have to hold on to it. But the truth is, if you hold on to it, you'll lose it. Because the only reason you have it is to do something with it. Not just put it in the bank and see it growing and growing and growing and growing and growing. But rather that I'm growing and the world is growing from what I can do with the wealth that I've been given. Whether it's wealth financially or whether it's wealth in terms of talents or whatever. And so it's just the opposite attitude. Just the opposite attitude. You don't know when the good times will be, and you don't know when the bad times will be. And therefore to say, well, I'm hoarding it and I'm holding on to it because I don't want to give it, because I'm afraid, you know, that when it's harder times, I won't have it. Wrong attitude. I don't know if I ever told you the story how I met one of the biggest supporters of Israelite. You know, I was raising money in the States, and I got a call to my home from, my mother tells me that a Mr. So-and-so called, and he wants to give money to Israelite. So I said, that couldn't be. Nobody calls you up and says they want to give money. Like, nobody does that. You know, generally you call, and they don't even call you back. You know, I said, I don't know who this person is. That's impossible. This must be a joke. Well, this guy called, and he said he wants to give money to Israelite. I said, this doesn't make any sense. I don't believe it. So I called the guy up, and he happened to be in the States, so it was a long distance call. I said, who is this? Maybe a friend of mine? It's a joke. I didn't know what it was. So I call him up. I said, hi, Mr. So-and-so. He says, hi. He says, I'd like to meet with you because I would like to make a donation to Israelite. I said, okay, come on, who is this? I said, that's Mr. So-and-so. So come on, who are you? Come on, what is this? He says, it's Mr. So-and-so. And I was in Jerusalem and I met a couple of your students and I was really impressed with what you're doing. And I want to make a donation. I said, yeah. And I thought, there must be a catch to this. Nobody wants to make a donation. It's like very rare to find people who go running after charity. All right, so he says to me, he lived outside of New York, okay? But about, you know, plane ride, about half an hour ride out into New York. So he says, are you going to be in the States? I said, yes. I said, but I'm only going to be in New York. I'm not going to be in your area. He says, oh, that's no problem. I'll fly in and meet you in New York. So I say, well, did you have business that you had to do in New York? He said, yeah, I'm meeting with you. Right? I said, come on, who is this? Come on, who is this? He says, no, I'm serious. I want to meet you. And he said, but could we meet like in the morning, because I want to be able to get the flight in and then meet with you for about an hour and a half so I can get the flight back. So I said, come on. It was impossible. You don't come flying in to meet someone so you can give them money. Nobody does that. But this man does this, right? And I met him. I still remember the Marriott Hotel just outside the airport. He made a very nice donation the first time. He says, and I'm going to come next summer. I'm going to do the program. If I like it, I'm going to give you more. And he's become one of the biggest supporters of Israelite. And that is the way a person should give charity. Not with the sense of, tearing, you know, a tooth out. With a feeling of, cast your bread to the waters. You don't know when it'll come back to you either. You know what I mean? It's an investment that one should do. And you can't, and you don't know when the bad times will come, so it's good times, it's a good time to give. Alright? Im yimlu avim geshem al aretz yariku. If the clouds will be filled, rain upon the ground, it will empty out. Ve'im yipol et bidarom ve'im betzafon. And if the fruit tree falls, okay, in the south or in the north, the place that it will fall, there they will be. All right. So one of the ways of understanding this is, if a cloud becomes full, its most natural response is to let the water go through it, so it will nurture, okay? So it will irrigate the land. So too, a person who has lots of money, okay? Or a person who has any form of wealth. If you have it, then the reason why you have it is so it'll pass through you, so it can do bigger and better things. So what he's really saying is for a person to hold on to their money is as foolish as a cloud holding on to its water. Okay? The only reason you have the water is in order to bring it onto the earth. All right? And if you don't let it go through, you just stop up and stop up and stop up. And most probably that's how storms happen. You know, it's clouds that are so full that until you're almost forced to give in some way. All right? Because that's the whole point, that you have it. And this is the secret of giving. The secret of giving is when you realize a rich person is not a person who has a lot of money. It's a person who gives a lot of money. That is what Judaism would define as a wealthy person. Because a wealthy person is a person who knows how to tap the infinite source of wealth, which is Hashem. And so therefore, if I think it's my money, so I'll hold on to it for dear life. I don't want to let go of it. But when I realize that really it's all Hashem's money, it's all Hashem's wealth, and I've been entrusted with it, I've been commissioned by God to be His personal gabbai, to be His personal one to distribute this money, what an honor I have. When you realize that, then you have tapped into the source of infinite wealth. The source of infinite wealth. Now, you know, I met a fellow in the States. He's a very wealthy man. Very, very wealthy man. And he told me that, Rabbi, I know exactly how I became wealthy. It's by giving charity. Right? Giving charity. I know that my business always does better when I give charity. So much so, am I convinced of this principle, that when I sold part of my business, in the contract, I demanded that there be a clause that they must give 10% of all profits to charity. So the people in negotiation said, this is crazy. We've been involved with bigger deals than this, mister. And we have never, ever heard of something so crazy as demanding in a business deal that we give 10% of the profits. I mean, what's it your business? We're buying a part of the business. And what we do with our profits is art. He says, you're not going to destroy my business. My business exists by virtue of the fact that it gives charity. And if it doesn't give charity, or if part of it won't give charity, it's going to destroy my business. Okay, it's going to destroy my business. And so they had it in a legal contract that they had to give charity, 10%. And that's the idea. That's the idea. Because what happens when the cloud releases its water? It comes to earth, and it anyway evaporates and becomes another cloud. It becomes its own source of wealth once again. All right? And so this is the true value of money, which is something that very few people realize what the true value of money is. Not what I can have, but what I can do with it. Okay? And if the tree falls, right? If the tree falls, then where it will fall, there they will be. In other words, if you don't give it in your lifetime, then basically, it'll end up in the hands of others when you die. Okay? So now in your lifetime, you have the opportunity to choose who you want to give your money to, rather than becoming like a tree that when you die, you don't know which way you'll fall, depending which way the wind will blow, and you don't know who will be the recipients of your wealth wherever you will find yourself at the end. Okay? It's a cute little joke, they say, that there was a group of people on a plane. The plane crashed. Well, it had an emergency crash in this unknown territory, totally uncivilized area. And people were crying. Oh, we're lost. Well, nobody's ever going to find us. Right? And then there was this Mr. Schwartz, and he was crying the hardest. And he says, they're going to find us. Right? So people saying, what's going on? Everyone's crying. They're not going to find us. And this guy's crying, and he's saying, they're going to find us. So someone came up with, Mr. Schwartz, what's wrong? Why are you crying? How do you know they're going to find us? He says, last week I pledged $100,000 to the UJA. They're going to find me. Okay. So anyways, they're going to find you in the end. So while you're alive and you have the wealth and the ability to give it away and to help others with it, so that's what it's there for. But later on, the recipients of it will be there. It was you didn't get the mitzvah, the opportunity to be the giver. Okay. Verse 4. Shomer ruach lo yizra, v'roe ba'avim lo yiksar. A person who's guarding the wind will not seed, and a person who's searching the clouds or seeing the clouds will never harvest. In other words, if you're neurotic and you're thinking, maybe today's not a good day to seed because the wind will come, and then, maybe today's not a good day to harvest because, it could rain. In other words, if we tie it into tzedakah, it's the same idea. There's always a better time, right? Not today, you know? Not today. I can't do it today. And if we're talking about a good deed, it's the same thing. I'm waiting for a better time, you know? If you're always waiting for a better time, it'll never come. Because in Judaism, there's no such thing as a better time than now. You know? As it says in Perkei Avot, Im eina nili mili, v'yumini latzmi mani, v'imloch shavei matai. If I'm not for myself, who is for me? But if I'm just for myself, then what am I? Okay? If I'm not for myself, who is for me? A person, if they can't take care of themselves, then they can't expect others to take care of them. But if a person, and so that's a basic idea in Judaism. Judaism is not a religion that is just so altruistic that you're supposed to forget about yourself completely. No, you've got to take care of yourself. You got to treat yourself well. But if you only treat yourself, imani kesherni la'atzmi, but if I'm just for myself, ma'ani, what am I? Interestingly enough, it doesn't say who am I. Okay? It says, if I'm not for myself, who will be? But if I'm just for myself, what am I? I'm only a what. I'm not even a who. Alright? But the bottom line is, v'im lo achshav ematan. And if not now, when? There's always a better time to learn Torah. There's always a better time to do charity. There's always a better time to do good deeds. No. Not true. There's no better time as the present. And that's basically what King David is saying, okay? That if you want to live your life, okay, then you live your life, the most productive way of living your life is with an easy-go-lucky attitude regarding charity and regarding good deeds, regarding Torah, regarding mitzvot, okay? And with an absolute commitment to now, okay? You can't say, well, now's not a good time. If now's not a good time, tomorrow won't be too. So many people say, gee, I'll learn Torah, but, you know, right now I've got a good business thing going, I've got to do this. Now's the time. Kasher eincha yodea ma derech haruach. Just as you don't know which way the wind will blow, you don't know which way the wind will blow. Ka'atzamim bebetin hamle'a. Like that which is closed up in the full stomach. This is referring to an embryo. In other words, just as you don't know which way the wind blows, just as you don't know the secrets of the embryo, and some say you don't know if it'll be a boy or a girl, but today you do know if it's a boy or a girl. But some commentary said, just as you don't know if it'll be a boy or a girl, but that was in their days. Nowadays, they know if it's a boy or a girl. Or you can know if you want to through ultrasound. Kach lo teida et maase Elohim. So too you will not know the act of God, asher esetiko, who does everything. In other words, you just don't know the future. You don't know if things are going to get better. You don't know if things are going to get worse. So all you know is what's happening now. And what's happening now, and what should be happening now, is I should be living my life in the fullest way. But how so? And the fullest way means like a cloud who is full, it releases its wealth upon others, upon the ground. That's the path of life we should take. Verse 6. B'bokir zara et zarecha v'le'erev al tinach yedecha. In the morning, seed your seeds, and in the evening, don't refrain. Ki eincha yodea eze yikshar azeh ozeh v'imshneim kechad. You don't know which one will turn out. Okay, whether it's this one or that one. In other words, in the morning when it's light and bright, you should be planting seeds. All right? And in the evening, when you really don't know what's going on, and it's harder times, it's darkness, you should still go on planting seeds. All right? So in other words, if a person was wealthy and they gave him a lot of money and whatever, for some reason they're now going through a time of misfortune, they should still give charity, whatever they can do. Okay? In the evening, when it's darkness, don't stop. Because you don't know which one will produce what. In other words, you don't know if your acts of kindness and charity that you did when you were rich are better than or more potent than, in terms of your ultimate spiritual life, than the ones that you did when you were poor. Okay? It's like I once heard it said that the question of charity is not how much you give, but it's how much you have left over. All right? Do you follow that? There was, yeah, sure, you can have a person who's a billionaire. All right? So they give $1 million. Wow. We're really impressed. But then there's another guy, little Yankele. He literally has $10 to his name. Right? And he gives $1. Now who did a greater act of tzedakah? Is charity a quantitative thing or a qualitative thing? It's also a qualitative thing. And therefore, whether it's during the bright times or the dark times, you don't know which one, in fact, will yield the greatest produce in terms of your spiritual life. And therefore, you should be investing. Investing meaning your charitable investments or your acts of good deeds at all times in your life. So therefore, there's no such thing as, oh, it's a bad time, come back tomorrow. Right? Or, ah, it's a good time, I better start hoarding it because maybe the bad time will start tomorrow. It's the same kind of thing that people use. Umatoka or the tovle naim lirat et ha-shemesh. And sweet is the light, and it's good for the eyes to see the sun. Another advice. What's sweet? The light. Enjoy the light. See the sun. Let the simple things in life give you pleasure. It's so good to wake up in the morning and see the sun shining. Take pleasure in that. Enjoy that. See the sweetness in that. Because if the sun and its light doesn't give you a little joy, then what will? You know, what will? And in fact, you know, it's interesting that they've discovered in psychology that people need sunlight, you know, and that there is depression that can come about without having enough sunlight. In fact, I had a student who had a very serious case of depression and went to a lot of doctors, and he was finally diagnosed by someone who had this particular sickness that is totally related to the sun. And therefore, what he has to do is every day sit in front of a lamp that gives off rays like the sun, and his life changed dramatically. Changed dramatically. Our bodies need sunlight, you know. And they find that there's higher cases of depression in areas where there's less sun, you know, very cloudy areas. So it's interesting, I don't know if King Solomon is suggesting this, but he says that the light is sweetness, which is kind of interesting because sweetness is generally something that you only associate with, okay, food. How can light be sweet? Only something that you internalize is sweet. King David is saying, no, light is nourishing. Light is a true sweetness. And it's good for the eyes to see the sun, right? And that's what should give you a lot of joy, right? It shouldn't be all this money that I might have, but be able to see the sun and enjoy the sun. Ki im shanim harbe yichyeh, right? Because if many years a person will live, v'kulam yismach, in all of them, rejoice. Be happy. V'yizkor et yemei achoshech, ki arbe yu kol shabai hevel. And remember the days of darkness that in fact will come. Sometimes people think life is long. And you know, sometimes it really is long. But that doesn't mean you should waste any days. You should rejoice in every day. Okay? And you should remember that the good times will not always be. You see, there is a tendency amongst people to kvetch. You know what kvetch is? It's a Yiddish word. It sounds like what it means. Which is complain. You hear people, they complain, and they complain, and they everything is like, nothing's ever good enough. They complain. Right? And of course, he says that what you have to do is when it's good, then learn to realize, hey, it's good. You know? I'm Baruch Hashem, I'm healthy. I'm Baruch Hashem, I've got food. I've got a roof over my head. The sun is shining. What am I fetching about? Why am I depressed? What am I so uptight about? Okay? Because it won't always be such good times. So when it's good, remember. You know, we have a tendency when it's bad, it's bad. But it's when it's good, we don't say anything. Okay? It's like when we talked about what we mentioned in the beginning of the program. That, you know, people have a tendency to give teachers feedback only when they don't like the class. Then they're willing to come up to me. He's this, he's that, he's that. Rarely do people come up and say, that was a great class. That was a great rabbi. That, you know, rarely when it's good, people don't acknowledge good. They only acknowledge bad. But of course, if you're only going to acknowledge bad, so then when does it become good? Right? When will it ever be good? All right? And so, King Solomon once again is giving us an attitude to life. A happy-go-lucky attitude. Happy-go-lucky in terms of good deeds and charity. Profuse in it. Easygoing. And being happy with what's going on right now. When what's going on is good, so let's remember to say, hey, it's good. The sun is shining. You know, it's like, it's so beautiful. Children, when they do pictures, right? Have you ever seen children's pictures? They have like the sun is smiling. Now, why is the sun smiling? It's such a funny thing. Like, whoever told the children that the sun is smiling? It's something that we know inside. That when the sun is shining, there's a certain joy there. And if we lose touch with the beauty and the joy of the sun shining, then what will make us happy? You know, that's why it says, "Mi ashir asameach b'chelko." Who is truly happy? One who is happy. Who is truly wealthy? One who is happy with their lot, with their portion. All right. If I can't take pleasure and joy in the sun shining, in those little things in life, then don't expect to take pleasure and joy in the big things in life. It just doesn't work that way. The same idea that we learn with Purim. You know, Rav Dessler explains, why does Purim come before Pesach? Right? Because in terms of the seasons, Purim comes right before Pesach. It's like six-week difference. So Rav Dessler explains, Purim is all about the hidden miracles. All right? If you can't see Hashem in the hidden miracles, in the natural events of things happening, then you really will not see the miracles, the outright miracles. You know? I don't know if I made this program, but I was once in a valley, and I saw this most bizarre thing, this V-shaped thing hovering in midair. All right? I had no idea what this was. It was hovering about the height of the ceiling, and I couldn't figure this out. Never seen anything like it. A V-shaped, thin, tubular thing hovering mid-air. So I waited. I thought, this is it. My opportunity. You know, the voice of God telling me to take off my shoes. That's it, I'm a Mashiach. I thought, wow, I'm having experience. But nobody spoke to me. So I began to throw rocks at it. Because I wanted to get it down. I wanted to say, what is this? How can this thing be hovering in midair? I was there literally for 2 hours. Now you understand why I never made the baseball team. And I'm waiting, I'm hoping someone will walk down the path. It was a valley, it was an empty kind of park area. I'm wondering, am I going nuts? Am I insane? Is this possible? Finally, this guy comes walking down the path. Oh, wow. Run after this guy. I say, hey, buddy, come here fast. Right? So he comes over. I say, do you see that? And he lifts his eyes up. And he says, wow! That's amazing. That's like a V-shaped thing hovering midair. I say, yeah, you see that? I says, yeah. And then at that moment, he looks at his watch. Says, oh, gee, I got to go. And he walked away. I've been there for 2 hours in just utter trance by this thing, this phenomenon. And this guy just looked at it and walked away. Do you see what can happen? If we cannot enjoy the mystery, the beauty, the wonder of just the rays of the sun, so then what will interest us? It's like when people talk about miracles. You know, people think miracles are these things that happen. You know, the sea splits. Ah, that was a miracle. Why? Because it happened once. The sun, I'm sure the first time man saw the sun rise, wow, what a miracle. But then the next day it rises. Oh, it's nature. What, you mean when something happens more than once, it's nature and it's not awesome? Just when it happens once, it's awesome, but if it happens more, oh, it's nature? That's what happens to us. If the rays of the sun don't inspire us, then what will? You know, what will? Just because the rays of the sun happen every single day? Well, the fact is that they don't. Because remember, the days of darkness are coming too. And so take pleasure and rejoice in the rays of the sun and acknowledge it and say, wow, it's a good day. The sun is shining. You know? It's like, you know, anyone see Oliver? You know, oh, what a wonderful morning. Oh, what a wonderful day. How's the way ever go? No, I know. Okay, but that's really the way we should. I don't know if we sing that particular song, but try Moda Ani Lefanecha. All right, verse 9. Samach Bachur Biyaldutecha. Bachur, lad, rejoice in your childhood. Ve'yetivcha libcha b'yemei bichortecha. And let your heart treat you in the days of your youth. Vahalech bedarkei libecha. And go in the ways of your heart. Ubimare einecha. And the ways of the sights of your eyes. V'yayda ki kol eile yavicha Elohim b'mishpat. And know that upon all of this, God will bring you to judgment. Now there's two ways of reading it. One is he's being somewhat... He's being sarcastic. He's saying, okay, you know, be happy in your childhood. Go after your heart and your eyes. You know, do what you feel like. And then, but remember, God is going to judge you for all of that. That's one way of reading it. But there's another way of reading it. And it's like this, that he's really being serious. That you should really enjoy your childishness. Okay? Bachur, sameach bachur biyaldutecha, which is very interesting. Bachur is an older kind of person. A bachur is, you know, older. You know, once you reach 13, you're called a bar mitzvah bachur. You're of the age of responsibility. All right? So why is he saying bachur, which is an age of maturity already? Okay? Why is he saying enjoy yaldutecha? Enjoy your childhood. Or your childishness. Okay? So King Solomon didn't need Bradshaw to understand that we have inside of us a child. You know, we have a child. We have a childishness in us. All right? And enjoy it. In other words, I think we could understand in these words of King Solomon that you should give importance to your childishness also. Because there's playfulness in your childishness. And you know, there's a tendency amongst people, even when they're doing tshuva, that they lose their playfulness. They become so serious. And everyone's afraid that'll happen. In fact, one of my students, when she said she was going to yeshiva, so her friends, you know, every one of her friends would say, well, gee, I hope you don't lose your, you know, your fun-loving side. Gee, I hope you won't lose your humor. And she even showed me a book that someone gave her, and in front of it, you know, inscribed in it is, have a good time, but please come back the same fun you. Okay? Because there's this attitude that when you're religious, when you're a Torah Jew, you're no fun anymore. Okay? You don't have that playfulness. No, yaldutecha can also mean your childishness. That's another way of interpreting the word yaldutecha. So he's saying, bachur, which is an age of maturity, enjoy your yaldutecha. Enjoy your somewhat, you know, your playful childish side. And in fact, I believe there's a Talmud that says, there's a story about a fellow who, in the will, okay, that he received from his father, says that you will receive all my wealth, but only under the condition that you become like a crazy person. Okay? So he didn't understand what that could mean. What could it mean? Why would his father want him to be able to become like a crazy person? All right? That was the criteria, that was the condition in the will. So he decided that he would go ask a rabbi. So he goes to the rabbi's house. And as he's approaching the house, he sees through the window the rabbi on the floor with keys in his mouth, going, and he's saying, my gosh, what's going on? What's going on? As he comes closer and closer, he sees that this great rabbi is meshuga. He sees like this great rabbi is crazy. But as he comes closer and closer, he sees that there's a little baby right in front of him. Right? And he realized, that's what my father must have meant. That only if you can be able to do that, but not to lose your child side, that spontaneity. Because Judaism does not ask you to lose your spontaneity. He's saying, Sameh b'chur b'yaldutecha, v'yativ kalibcha b'yamei b'chortecha, and during your, you know, and let your heart treat you, and go in the ways of your heart, and go in the ways of your eyes, right? I'm not telling you, King Solomon is saying, that there shouldn't be a quality of that childlike, fresh, playful spontaneity. However, vidda, and also know, right? Not that he's being sarcastic, but know that on all this, Hashem will bring you to justice. And therefore, you have to know your limitations. All right? But not that you shouldn't have this quality in your life of the spontaneous playfulness. All right? But that you should be careful that it doesn't lead you to a point where God will judge you for doing something wrong. Alright? V'haser kas milibecha. And remove anger from your heart. V'avera mibisarecha. And remove bad from your flesh. Ki yaldut v'hashachrut hevel. Because your childhood can be fleeting, or actually your childhood is fleeting. So, what does he say? One idea that is expressed here is you should always get rid of anger. Okay? Don't keep it in. Don't implode, but you got to get it out. All right? Don't hold in your anger. And remove evil from your flesh. Which seems that he's already anticipated, you know, the whole notion of psychosomatic things, that your anger can in fact bring evil, bad, to your flesh. And therefore get rid of the anger from your heart and thereby pass away the bad from your flesh. Okay? Because remember, your childhood is fleeting. Therefore you might feel strong and healthy and full of life. You know, but the truth is that that's very fleeting. So if you want to stay in shape and you want to feel young forever, then one of the attitudes is don't harbor anger. Okay? And so these are some, you know, points of advice that King Solomon is teaching us. And this brings us to chapter 12. Zechorat borecha b'yemei bechoratecha. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Youth not being kid, remember. Bechor is, you know, in your days of, you're mature. Ad asher lo yavo yemei ara'a. Before the bad times come. V'igiyo shanim, and the age will come. Asher tomer ein li behem chefetz. To the point where you'll say, I don't want any more. This, by the way, the Talmud refers to the idea that we talked about before. Of course, a person should do tshuva at any age. But it's easier to do tshuva when a person's, you know, 95 years old and say, you know what? I'm not going to get involved with those kind of, you know, perverse sexual relations anymore. No way, not me. No. You know, when a person's old and they've lost some of their drives or perhaps a lot of their drives, so you should do tshuva when you're youthful. And that's one of the ways that they've understood this pasuk in the Gemara. Do tshuva before ad asher lo tachshach hashemesh, before the sun will start to go dim, va'or v'hayareach v'kochavim, the light, the moon, and the stars, v'shavu avim achar hageshem, and the clouds return after the rain. Now what King Solomon is about to do is go into a whole metaphorical understanding of age. All right, it's really remarkable. So he says, do tshuva before the sun starts to go dark. Why? Because I'm losing my eyesight. Okay? And the clouds are returning after the rain. Biyom shiyazu shimrei habayit. In the day that the guardians of the house begin to tremble. This is referring to the ribs and to your bones. They're like the guardians of the house. And they start to tremble. V'itavdu anshei hachayil. And the men of power will begin to go crooked. And this, the commentator explained, is he's referring to the knees. That the knees start to be bent. I can't really stand up straight. Ubatlu hatchonot. And the grinders start to be canceled out, referring to the teeth. Ki ma'atu v'chashchu haraot. Those who see through the windows start to diminish. And that's referring to the eyes looking out the window. V'sagru hadlatayim b'shuk. And the doors to the outside are closing. These is referring to apertures. Okay? B'shefo koach hatchana. And tchana is to grind also. And this is referring to the digestive system. Okay? That it's not proper. V'yakum l'kol hatzipor. And one will jump at the sound of a bird. You know, I'm restless, it's sleeping, I'm not able to sleep well. Or when I hear a bird chirp, I think it's something dangerous rather than a beautiful sound. And he's really giving us a description of old age. I don't know if you've really seen old age and you know, met people. I was in an old folks home, not for myself, of course, but I was visiting a someone who works there. And I tell you, if you really want to do tshuva, all right, go to an old folks home, and you'll realize, boy, I don't want to waste my life. You know, not that these older people had wasted their lives, but you realize there's a deadline to this whole story. And you're not always going to have all this energy, and you're not going to always have all these opportunities. And I tell you, it was such a shocking experience to be in this home. And so, he gives us a whole description of what the experience of the aged can be like. Vishachu kol benot hashir. And the sounds of song become muffled. You can't enjoy song. Even the sound of a bird makes you scared. You know, your digestive system is, you know. Gam migvoa yiru. And also from heights, they're afraid. Right? It's like if you see a very old person walking down the street, they're afraid of a curb. For them, a curb is already a height. You know, you see an old person just being able to get down off the curb is like a major feat. V'tachatim b'derech, and there are all kinds of terrors lurking on the way. You know, what are the terrors? You know, maybe a
a car will beep.
You know, it's like, so therefore at that older age, you know, a person's afraid to even go outside. You know, I was speaking with a woman, I was in Florida. You know, they say that Miami's become a big old folks home, you know, because the elder go down there. So this woman lives by herself in a home. And I said, well, you know, do you go out? She said, oh, no, I don't want to go out. You know, you just don't know what will happen if you go out. Okay? I said, uh-huh. So what, do you call friends? Oh, no, I don't want to call friends. I said, why? Every time I call a friend, they tell me about another friend that died. I don't want to hear it. You know, it was very, very sad. So while we have our youthfulness and we have our energy, that's when we should really be doing tshuva. V'yene'etz hashaked, and the almond is quick to grow. This is referring to all kinds of tumors and all kinds of boils, all right? Which is like an almond. V'yistabel hachagav, and you'll become stooped like an overloaded grasshopper. That's one of the ways of translating this. Okay. V'tefer v'yonim ki holech adam el beit olmo, and the mourners are walking about and they're eulogizing you in the market. In other words, that's really the feeling that people are already talking about the person as if they're already dead, even though they're not dead. So it gives us a very strong metaphorical feeling of what age is, because sometimes people, only when they realize what it means to grow old, are they ready to appreciate what it really means to be young and to be able. And of course, his whole point is that when you're young and able, that's the time to do tshuva. That's the time to really think about what you can do with your life and how you can improve it. Verse 6. Ad asher lo yirchak chevel hakesef. Do this. Remember your Creator before. You know, this is all referring to that first verse. Remember your Creator. Okay? So remember your Creator before the silver cord snaps. This is referring to your spinal cord. You know, it's the silver cord. V'tarutz gulat hazahav. And the golden bowl shatters. This is referring to the brain, they say. Kad admavo v'narutz hagalgal elabor. And it just, the wheel breaks and it just falls into a hole. Right? It gives you the sense that, you know, our bodies are such a beautiful, incredible, precise mechanism. And that once that cord just snaps, everything just falls apart. V'yeshav ha'afar el ha'aretz. And the dust returns to the ground. Kishaya, from whence it came. V'aruach tashuv el Elohim. And the soul, the spirit, will return to God who gave it. And so do tshuva before you reach a point where you can't really do it with the kind of strength that you have right now. And do it before the body, so to speak, the dust, before you return to dust, and the soul returns to its eternal abode. Now he ends off Kohelas by kind of returning to his original theme. He kind of ends off with the way he started. Havel havalim amar Kohelas hakol havel. Vanity of vanity, says Kohelas, it's all vain. V'yoter shaya Kohelas chacham od limed dat. Not only, more than the fact that Kohelas was a wise person, he also taught knowledge to the nation. V'izen v'chiker, he weighed ideas, so to speak. V'chiker, and he probed. Tikei mashalim harbeh, he produced many, many parables. You know, in our tradition, there is, it says that King Solomon wrote thousands of pieces. We don't have everything he wrote. And therefore, apparently he wrote a book of medicine, and we don't know where it is. So it's very possible that some of his writings have somehow, you know, ended up in all kinds of cultures and all kinds of peoples, you know. But he says over here that he put together a lot of various parables, which is like teachings. Bikesh Kohelas limtso divrei chefetz. Kohelas sought to find words that are pleasing. chefetz, things that are desirable. V'katuv yosher, writings that are straight. Divrei emet, the words of truth. Divrei chachamim, he sought for, divrei chachamim kedar bonot. The words of the wise are like goads, which are things that guide the animal. Okay? U'kimishmarot, kimasmarot, nituim ba'ale asufot nitnu meroechat. And like wide-headed nails that hold things together. If you put a nail but doesn't have a wide head, so things can come apart. If it has a wide head, it'll keep it together. And it's all given from one shepherd, referring to God. V'yoter mehema b'ni, and more than all this, my son, hizeher asot sfarim harbeh. Be careful in what you do. Sfarim harbeh ein ketz. There are many books. There's no end. V'lahag harbeh yigat basar. And too much study will wear your flesh. All right? And this is just so appropriate, because this is one of the heaviest books around. King Solomon has really taken us through a guided tour of life's struggles, all the ultimate questions of life, and all the ultimate struggles of life that we all have. And his final advice is that wisdom, nothing can compare to wisdom. Okay? And especially the wisdom that comes from the one shepherd, which is referring to Hashem. And you should know that there are lots of books, no end to books, but realize that too much study wears your flesh. In other words, you could be simply tying yourself out by trying to figure it all out. Because his ultimate answer to us is, I tried to figure it out, and I couldn't. Okay? I couldn't figure it out. And don't think you'll figure it out. Because life wasn't meant to be understood, it was meant to be lived. And so, he cautions us of too much intellectualism, too much probing, and in the process, lose what it means to really be alive. Sof davar hakol nishma. In the end, after all has been heard, et Elohim yiran. This is his ultimate advice. After all has been said and done, have reverence for God. Ved mitzvotov shmor, and guard his mitzvot, ki ze kol hadam. Because that's the all of man. Okay? That's the all of man. That is the meaning of life, according to Judaism. To have reverence for God and do the mitzvot. Because that's the all of man. Ki et kol ma'ase Elohim yavo b'mishpat. Because all the acts of God will come with justice. Al kol ne'alem im tov v'imra. That a person should know that all the acts of God comes with justice, whether it's the good and whether it's the bad. And therefore, King Solomon ends up with a basic principle of faith. Have reverence for Hashem. And that's really the ultimate request of Judaism. It says, all Hashem is asking of us is to have reverence. Now the question is, why does that Gemara says all that God is asking of us is to have reverence? Why doesn't it say it's a Gemara on a verse? Okay? Why doesn't it say that God is asking of us love? The understanding is to love Hashem is natural. Okay? Our souls naturally gravitate to God. Alright? But we need to have reverence. Because just like in a love relationship, okay, the love can damage the relationship. Because the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that love damages borders. And reverence creates borders and boundaries. But if there are no borders, if there are no boundaries, then the love itself dissipates. Alright? And so therefore, this is one of the major principles of Judaism. What we really have to invest in, Judaism teaches, is to have reverence for God. Okay? Love will come natural. In fact, loving Hashem is very dangerous because the love may bring me to very dangerous assumptions that it's okay, that it doesn't make a difference, oh, you'll understand, oh, you'll forgive me for that, oh, you know me. You know, that attitude towards God, because you have such a love for God, and you feel, you have a sense of God's love for you, that you feel comfortable to transgress things. So one of the major principles in Judaism is to have reverence. That's principle number one. Principle number two is to do the mitzvot. And principle number three is to realize that there is reward, there is punishment, there are consequences to our deeds, and God relates to the world with the attribute of justice. And so therefore, King Solomon ends Kohelis with the three principles of Judaism. So what did we learn from Kohelis? Kohelis, it's hard to know whether everything King Solomon shared with us is his own personal experience, or whether it was a character he played called Kohelis. It's hard to know. But basically, he starts off with life being vain, futile, fleeting, okay? The monotony of life. The world looks like it's just spinning its wheels. Mankind looks like he's chasing his tail. And he basically takes us through all the ultimate questions that all human beings will ask in the search for a life that matters. To redeem myself so I can feel a sense of real significance. And his final conclusion is that I can't figure it all out, but what I have to do is live my life and enjoy my life. And what does it mean to live my life and enjoy my life? Well, number one, it means to be playful and spontaneous. But number two, it means to be careful and to be cautious that the spontaneity of life and the enjoying of life doesn't come at the expense of doing something that's simply not kosher. And so it has to be a balance between the spontaneous, playful aliveness and yet a healthy reverence for Hashem, not to do anything wrong and go beyond the borders. And at the three principles, I always have to remember, as I'm living my life, eating my bread, drinking my water, and seeing joy in the labors of my labor, is that bottom line, reverence for Hashem, following the mitzvot, and knowing that there is justice. And that's the end of Kohelis.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.